ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading from the third chapter, text number 6. But whose mind dwells on sense objects suddenly deludes himself and is called a pretender. In the previous chapter, Krishna described about the knowledge of the soul, Atma. After hearing which, now Arjuna thought that now I should just accept the knowledge and become inactive. So he thought that now I should just be inactive. I should not do any action. He thought that maybe Krishna is recommending me to go to forest and just live in peace, in seclusion. So here Arjuna is asking some questions at the beginning of this chapter, third chapter, entitled Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is very important. And people are eager to know what is this Karma Yoga. So Krishna will be teaching Arjuna here what he actually meant when he taught him the second chapter. So here there are a few verses before we came to this verse. Maybe one or two will be helpful for us to read before we come to this. Here in the third verse, Purport Prabhupada explains here, religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. The ultimate goal is Krishna. Because the philosophers who are also sincerely searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna consciousness. This is also stated in Bhagavad Gita. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relation to the super self. The indirect process is philosophical speculation, by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness. And the other process is directly connecting with everything in Krishna consciousness. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better, because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. The meaning is very simple, although it sounds difficult. Two things he is talking about here, religion and philosophy. Somebody can succinctly tell me what religion is all about. Somebody can define, what do you think is religion? Yeah? So you are saying verdict of God. It's God's law. Okay, somebody else would like to also say something, one or two sentences about what is religion? God consciousness is religion, yeah. That's nice. Anybody else wants to add to this two things?
Any belief.
Who is that? Yeah, any belief. Okay. So it need not be true, or it should be true?
It need not be true all the time.
Okay. Action. It's like a belief system. Like people have different beliefs and they also worship accordingly, is it? Okay, right. Anybody else wants to add to this more? Yes, Deepa? You have an answer? That means some concoction which they have cooked something of their own. Okay. Yeah, of course, religion can have its own derogatory meaning, like the one you said. But religion has its proper meaning also. So religion means a set of rituals and rites that one performs for God. Like for example, like in a religion we may do many things, like, you know, you put a tilak, you put a kantamala, you bow down before God, you do agarbati for him, you do ghee lamp for him, and you recite some prayers and mantras. So like rituals, these are rituals. There are two classes of people. One class says that the rituals are everything. You know, they are always absorbed in performing some ritualistic activities. And there are others who say that we have to know the essence or the philosophy behind the rituals. Otherwise, what is the use of doing some empty rituals? Simply doing some kind of religion, worshipping God without knowing what it is all about. So philosophy is important. So how many of you feel religion is important? You can raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. How many of you feel philosophy is important? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Almost equal number, sir. How many of you feel both are important? Everyone. Okay. So both are important. Here it says, what happens? Religion without philosophy is mere sentimentalism or fanaticism, he says. If only somebody is doing rituals without knowing why is he doing those rituals, then such a religion is not appreciated. Such a religion will actually lead to ruin. It will lead to fanaticism. Like many people, this is the kind of ritualistic religion that many people are doing, if you see. All over the world if you go. Every religion, whether it is Hinduism, Christianity or Islam, in all religions people are doing some kind of rituals, rites, without knowing why am I doing what I am doing. They don't know the purpose behind it. And they worship anybody. Like you see in India, in any place you put some stone under a tree and you put some kumkum chandan, and then after some time you will find a hundi box there. And then people come and put money in the hundi. And some people start circumambulating, becomes like a temple. They start worshipping. Without even asking, who is this person? Who is this God? They don't even know that. That's called as ritualistic worship, without knowing the meaning. So this kind of empty religion, like Deepak Prabhu was saying, it's a good point. That people, like Shiva was saying about belief. Belief means you don't know exactly whether it's true or not. You have some kind of faith in that. It may or may not be true. So this kind of derogatory meaning is often attached to religion in the modern times, because that's what we see around. But religion also has a true meaning, which means you have faith in something sublime. There is a truth. You can't deny that. There is a God, otherwise there cannot be any creation. Nothing comes by itself. There is one supreme God. Religion means a set of rituals and rites which we perform that are given in the Shastra. Why we should perform also is given. And by performing them, we get in touch with God. We get in closer touch with God. That is actually the meaning of religion. Like we perform, arati that we perform every day, it is a meaning. Like everything, like we are offering fire to God when we offer the lamb. We are offering agarbati, we are offering the air to God. When we are offering the pushpa, the flower, we are offering the fragrance to God. So like when you are offering the conch shell and water, you are offering the water element to God. And when you blow the conch shell, you are offering the sound element to God. So in this way, all the elements which come from God, you are offering it back to Him. That is actually the understanding behind offering. And then when you bow down, we are offering our mind to God. In fact, we are offering our ego also to God, saluting Him by bowing down to Him. So religion has actually a very great purpose behind it. The purpose of religion, to put it in simple terms, is to develop love for God. As simple as that. It's very simple. The ultimate religion is love for God. To understand who God is and how to love Him and how to serve Him. Because according to Bhagavad Gita and as well as other scriptures, originally we all belong to the spiritual world, not this world. And in spiritual world we always love Him and serve Him. Always keeping God in the center. But we have come into this world due to a specific reason, because we wanted to be proprietors and enjoyers. So these two are considered the two greatest diseases of the living being. I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer. I am the enjoyer means I am the pivot of the whole world. That's what we all think, generally. And proprietor means everything is owned by me. So if you want to own more besides what we have, you will see that this tendency which is deep-rooted right from childhood, you can even see in childhood now. Sometimes the child picks up all the toys and keeps it himself. He doesn't want to give it to others. You have seen children like that, picking up toys and keeping. He will have 10 toys with him, he will not give one to the other child. So it's a greedy tendency to own things, to be a swami or be a proprietor of something. Similarly, enjoying mentality is, Krishna talks about the bhokta. Enjoying mentality means, I am the enjoyer and everything is meant for my enjoyment only. Only me, not anybody else. That is actually called as enjoying mentality. So this, Krishna explains, later on we will study in the 5th chapter, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. He says, my dear Arjuna, if one knows these three things, then he can achieve peace of mind in his life. Three things he says. It's called as peace formula, we call that shloka. Very simple. You all can repeat after me. Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam Nyatvamam Shantim Richati. So three things he says. He says, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. I am the enjoyer. I am the supreme enjoyer of all that being in this world. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor of all the lokas, earth and sun and moon and stars and planets and everything. And Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. I am the Suhrit means well-wisher of all living beings. I am the only friend and well-wisher of everyone. If you know these three things, he says, then you will achieve peace of mind in your life. So it may appear very difficult. How is Krishna or the Lord is the enjoyer? Very simple. For example, say I am a carpenter, for example. I come to you. You give me some wood, you give me some tools like chisel and hammer and everything. So I take those things from you and I make a nice table like this. I put this and put a glass on that. Now I made the table. Now after making the table, I find the table is so attractive. Now I say that, let me carry it with me. And you ask me, I give you the materials, I give you the tools, I give everything for you to make this table. And I am also ready to pay you the wages for which you have done, the labor cost. And how can you take the table? You say, no, the table is so nice that I would like to have it myself. Can you do that? No. Because everything is owned by the owner. I am a servant and the owner has given me all these facilities. I have to give it back to him. In the same way, you see, all of us, when we come into this world, we don't own anything. We are not the owner. So when we don't own anything, we can't be enjoyer either, isn't it? How can we be the enjoyer? Like for example, if a house is open, the door is open, I just peep into the house, I don't find anybody there. I just, use all the things, whatever nice things are there, I take it, I eat nice things, I sleep there, I carry some nice things from there and run away. Will I not be considered a thief? Isn't it? If I enter somebody else's house like that, isn't it? In the same way, the Lord is asking, all the living beings have come into this world and according to their strength, like might is right, we say, isn't it? People have picked up whatever they wanted from this world, isn't it? Like sometimes you have seen the government takes back the land from the citizen, you have seen that? They do that, isn't it? If somebody has like 500 acres of land, then there is some land selling act, I think, isn't it? There is some land selling act. Government says that, no, return all the land. You can only have some minimum. Like they have minimum, I think, isn't it? Minimum. Yeah. Like you can have 10 acres or something and then balance, you have to return it back to the government. Some or other, some people have encroached so much land and they possess so much land, and the government takes it back. Like India has a government, the universe also has a government. Like Indian government, who is the in charge of Indian government? Yeah? Yeah, Prime Minister, isn't it? Prime Minister of India. Similarly, who is in charge of the universal government? God is in charge. And Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yegidapasam, I am the supreme enjoyer. So he says, all the things that you see in this world are created for my enjoyment, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. That means when we open our eyes and see in this world, like you see, the beautiful trees are creating fruits like apple and orange and grapes and watermelon and whatnot. So why are they creating all these fruits? What is it meant for? For whom is it meant for? Yeah, for Krishna. Krishna says that it's meant for the Lord only. So ideally speaking, one should pick up these fruits from the trees and go and offer it to the Lord in the altar first. Because not only the fruits, the minerals are the gold and silver and pearls and jewels, everything, whatever you find in this world is meant for Lord's enjoyment only. It's supposed to be used by him. Of course, we are allowed to take our quota, whatever we need, because we also need food to eat. First you give it to God and then you take it from him. God is the mother, God is the father of everyone. So we give it to the Lord, everything, saying that everything belongs to you. Just like you have seen in Ganges, we take the water like this and offer it back to Ganges. Tera tujhko arpan kya lage mera, isn't it? Om Jai Jagadishwari. When we sing like this. Tera tujhko arpan, I am taking from you, my dear Lord, I am offering it back to you only. Because you are the enjoyer. So this is the understanding that God is supreme and everything belongs to him. And we should give him enjoyment, not try to enjoy ourselves. Now one may say, why should I do that? Why not I enjoy? Because I feel like enjoying myself. Somebody can say, why should we not enjoy? Why to give it to God? Somebody can say. Just raise your hand. Whomever I ask question, only they can answer. Because anybody knows the answer for this? Like, you know, we all feel like enjoying ourselves, right? Why should we give enjoyment to somebody else? Why not we enjoy? It's very nice. When I return home, I feel like drinking a cup of juice. I like to dress very attractively. I like to decorate my body very nicely. So why should I worry about God and dress him attractively and, you know, give him food, you know, give him attractive dress and give him all enjoyment, put golden ornaments on his body and all that. why should I do that? Why not I enjoy? Is there any problem in that? You know the answer, yeah? That's nice, yeah. So if you don't offer, what will happen? What do you think will happen if you don't give it to God first and we take it? What will happen, yeah? Our sins are eradicated, they are removed. That's what she is saying is true. Lord says that I am the enjoyer and you have to offer it to me. Just like you take the example of food. Like if the hand is a part of the body, leg is a part of the body, eyes are part of the body, nose is part of the body, mouth is part of the body. All are parts and parcels of the body. But what are all these different parts doing? They are actually taking the food and putting in the stomach, isn't it? When you put in the stomach, then all the senses of the body become nourished. So this example is given in the Shastra, very nice example in Bhagavatam, that all the parts and parcels of the body should cooperate with the whole body, especially the stomach. You put the food in the stomach, then all the senses can be happy. Otherwise imagine, like in Panchatantra there is a story which says that there was a you can come little friend, some more devotees want to come here. In Panchatantra there is a story, once upon a time all the senses, they went on a strike. They said, why should we feed this stomach who is just sitting very comfortably in one place? So they all thought that let us not cooperate with the stomach. They were actually, the eyes were saying that I won't look at the food. The hands were saying I won't pick up the food. And the nose was saying I won't smell the food. The teeth were saying I won't crush the food. They all went on a strike. What do you think would have happened? when all the so some of them have come just now, I'll ask them this. Somebody can briefly tell them what I was saying just now. Who can give them a synopsis of what has been going on for the past 10 minutes? 5 minutes. Somebody can tell them. Somebody, anybody, any of you? One who was here before. Give them a, in connection to that, I was telling this story from Panchatantra. That all the different senses of this body went on a strike, isn't it? Like the teeth said, why should I crush the food while the stomach is eating, enjoying? Huh? Eye said, why should I look at the food? Huh? Hand said, why should I take the trouble to pick up the food and put in the mouth? Huh? So all of them went on a strike. And then after a couple of days, the senses found that they are becoming very weak. The hands are weak, and the eyes are weak, and the teeth is weak. Whole body was getting weak. Then they realized that unless you put the food in the stomach, then we cannot get our strength, they realized. So, we understand that even when you are tired, like you know, when you are coming from the station carrying a heavy luggage, when the hands are very much paining and you are tired, you are feeling hungry, you make the same hands work and put the food in the stomach only. It's not that you give food to the hand, isn't it? Even if you take some laddu or something in the hand and try to give the hand, do you think the hand can enjoy? Hand cannot enjoy, but the hand has to put it in the stomach. In the same way, God is like the stomach, and we are all parts and parcel of God. We are also having same quality of God. But being a part, if the part does not serve the whole, then the part cannot be happy. The duty of the part is to serve the whole. Just like you have a telephone, like you have a mobile, you have so many buttons in there. See, all the buttons, if they all cooperate with the whole mobile, by pressing the buttons, then you can call someone, isn't it? If one of the buttons says, why should I be sitting here? Let me get out. Then he comes out of that mobile and sits outside. What do you think you can do with that small button? It becomes good for nothing. You can't do anything with that. Similarly, when the soul is separated from God, he cannot be of any use. He only suffers. That is the condition of all the people in the world today. We all are suffering in this world because we have separated ourselves from God. So we lose our potency. So we suffer. So God is the actual enjoyer. So if I want to enjoy, the method is that I serve Him, then I will get enjoyment. Like if the hand wants to enjoy, the hand serves the stomach, then the hand gets enjoyment. It's very natural. It's a very simple formula. Just like another example given in Bhagavatam, just like the tree has leaves and roots, I mean the tree has got leaves and branches and twigs and flowers and fruits and everything. If all the parts of the tree should get nourishment, where should you water the tree? You'll water in the root. So God is the root of everything. Very simple definition of God is that God is the source of everything. If somebody asks you, what is God? Who is God? You can say, God means the source of everything. Very simple. Janma jasya yataha. Very simple definition. God means from whom everything has sprouted, everything has emanated. Yataha pravrittir bhutanam, Krishna says in the 18th chapter. Yataha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam. Svakarmanatam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manavah. He gives the paribhasha, the definition for karma yoga there in the 18th chapter also. Whatever karma you do, if you offer it to God, yathah pravritir bhutanam, from whom everything has come, if you offer it to Him in love, then you will be a happy man. Then you can become happy. It's possible to become happy in life. So God is a supreme enjoyer. As I told you, somebody remember the example I was telling about the carpenter? Taking things from God, we are taking everything from God. We are taking air from Him, light from Him, water from Him, fruits from Him, grains from Him, everything, practically everything in this world. So how can we enjoy all these things without taking the permission of one who has given us all these things? So we have to acknowledge that He is the supreme enjoyer. That's why we have to offer these things first to Him, and then we accept it later. Similarly, God is the Swami or the proprietor. He is the proprietor of everything. Actually, when we were born, we didn't even know who are we, when our parents raised us, and then whatever our father possesses, that belongs to us later. Because father passes away after some time, and you become the proprietor of that. And then you may be owning it for some time, probably for 50 years or 60 years, and then we leave it and go. Somebody else comes and owns it. So all this land belongs to whom? Isn't it? Does it belong to any of us? How long do we possess it? We come with naked hands and we go away with naked hands, naked body. We don't carry anything with us. You know, when astronomers were traveling in the rocket, from Russia. You know, they were looking at their own land with binoculars. I mean, they were looking from there at Moscow. They were looking at Moscow. Why they were looking at Moscow? Because they belonged to Russia. They were looking at Moscow, thinking that this is our own land. All of you, you can imagine for a moment. Imagine that you are going high in the sky. You are taking off from Earth. You are going higher and higher and higher. Just look at Earth from a long distance and all the planets. How do you think they will look like? They will look like just some sand particles, isn't it? If you go very, very far, they will just... It look like some sand particles suspended in the air. All these planets look like some suspended particles in air. But because we are in the Earth planet, we demarcate it as Maharashtra. Or demarcate it as Uttar Pradesh and Madhya Pradesh and all that. These demarcations are done by the human being only. Similarly, the other lands also, like within Pune, we have demarcated some land as mine and other land as yours. But if you see, if you go in the top and you find it's like all these planets, they're all floating in the sky like a swab of cotton, like some dust particles flying in the sky like that. So everything is owned by God, and also everything is controlled by God. Ishopanishad, there is a verse, Mantra 1, it says that. Everything in this universe is owned by God, everything is controlled by God. So, religion, I was talking about religion. The religion is a set of rituals that we perform in order to gradually bring us to the point of loving God and serving Him. Like you see, I was telling that we offer puja to God. We also sing His names. Like in the beginning, we were playing the mridangam, isn't it? We were singing also in the beginning. Why do we sing? The singing is actually a call for God. We are calling Him. And we are actually declaring to God that I am your servant eternally, and I have been very happily serving you before. But now, due to some misfortune, I have left your company and I have come to this world. And here I am suffering, enduring so much suffering here. So please kindly put me back in your association and company, and again I can be joyful in your company. That's the meaning of this mantra, what we chanted just now, in the beginning. So it's a ritual, of course it's a ritual. But the ritual is ultimately meant for bringing us to that platform of realization. On the other hand, the philosophy, what he is talking about here, is very important. We have to know why are we doing what we are doing. Certainly we have to know that. We don't say that you don't have to do things blindly without asking why you are doing a certain thing. But some people, in the name of learning philosophy, they read a lot of books, philosophical books. They know a little bit of Bhagavad Gita, little bit of Bible, little bit of Quran, then you know quotes. In fact, there are many Vedantists who sometimes have philosophical debates amongst them. They pound on the table and they have arguments. But then they don't practice anything at all. They don't practice anything. They just speculate about God. See, speculation is very dangerous because speculation will not always lead us to end. Like you have seen, if you have touched the nose, this is the easy way to touch the nose, isn't it? If you have to go around like this, I may touch my ear and think that this is my nose, isn't it? Slightly. Or I may touch my eyes and think this is my nose. So it's very difficult to reach the nose by our own speculation. But if somebody shows you that this is your nose, it's very easy for you to touch like that. Similarly, the philosophers sometimes come together and argue about the absolute truth. What is God? So many people argue. Some people say this is God, some people say that is God. Tarko, apatishta, ashitiva, vibhinna. There are so much arguments going on all over the world of people talking about God. And sometimes such arguments never come to an end. It's like, imagine a huge banyan tree. In Chennai there is a banyan tree which is almost 5 kilometers radius or something. Of course, the stem is not so thick, but there are a lot of roots coming from the top to bottom, you know. It's like 5 kilometers almost area it covers. Big tree. Imagine that there is one worm in that one of the branches of the tree, and the worm wants to reach the root of the tree. Is it possible? By its own endeavor? Can the worm find out the root of the tree? He is in one corner, one twig. So he has to come down. Like imagine, like here the fan has three branches here. If it is one corner, if it comes to that end, he may think that the end of that branch is the root. That's what you will think. But then it's not the truth. He has to actually travel further. And then he has to travel further and further and further. And it's very difficult to find out the root itself. But if somebody directly tells you, here is the root, this is the root of the tree, you water this root and very soon you will see that tree growing. It's very simple, isn't it? So that is why only philosophy without religion cannot bring us to a proper understanding of God. It's not possible. That's why he says philosophy without religion will be simply mental speculation. It leads us nowhere. See, there are many people who claim to be knowing so many swamis and so many yogis. In India as well as abroad, there are so many yoga societies started. And many boys and girls, they say that we also go to yoga society. But you ask them, if you are going to yoga society, what is the purpose of going to yoga society? Do you know the meaning of the word yoga? Anybody knows the word yoga? The meaning of the word yoga? You heard this word yoga, yeah?
Regulation.
Regulation? He is saying yoga means regulation, he is saying. Is it correct in understanding? Meaning? What is yoga? Yeah, in yoga they do regulation, that is true. But the word yoga is a Sanskrit word. What is the meaning of yoga? To connect, yeah. To join or to connect, yeah. So the word yoga comes from the word yuj, as a root word. That means to re-establish one's connection with God is called as yoga. That's the meaning. Tell me, how many yoga centers teach you to become reconnected to God? Do we do that when you go to yoga centers? See, there are 8 stages in yoga. Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Asana, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. The 8th stage is Samadhi, where one can completely be absorbed in trance and see the form of God. One can love God. One can serve Him. One can see God face to face in that Samadhi stage. It's possible. Whereas how many religions take us to that point? Actually, Yama and Niyama is do's and don'ts, that's what you are selling now. Regulation you are saying. And then comes Pranayama, controlling of the breathing. Control the breathing. And then Asana, means performing asanas, yoga asanas. That many yoga societies are teaching today. And then comes Pratyahara. Pratyahara means shutting off all the senses and not giving them the wrong things. Like, you know, not seeing bad things with eyes, not hearing bad things with ears, not eating bad things with the mouth like that. Or not speaking bad things with the mouth like that. So Pratyahara. And then comes Dharana, means the meditation begins there. Dhyana is a deeper meditation. And Samadhi is a trance, where one can see God face to face like that. How many yoga societies do you think they teach all these things? Many of the yoga societies today, if you see, they talk of the philosophy, they may teach you asanas, but many of them, they teach you how to have a healthy body, that's all. How to have a healthy body, how to enjoy life, how to do some asanas so that you can be stress free or whatever. They don't take us back to God at all. That's why people who talk philosophy, sometimes people have dry arguments on philosophy. Even if you argue for hours and hours and hours about what the absolute truth is God impersonal or is God personal? Is God Krishna or is God Shiva? Or why is God Jesus or is God Allah? All these questions are there. And there are scriptures which give answer to these questions. That is why first one needs a guru who can bring one to the platform of understanding truth. When Srila Prabhupada went to the West, Prabhupada is the founder of ISKCON Society. When he went to the West, he saw there were many fake godmen in the West. Like at one point there was a long queue of people. They were going to one fake godman, and devotees asked them, where are they going? And they said, here is a Swami who takes $50 and makes people God. He takes $50, you pay $50 and he'll give you a secret mantra which you chant, and then 6 months you can become God. So Prabhupada asked his disciples, if he can make them God, then why not he become God himself? And if he becomes God, he will have everything. Then why should he make others God? So there were many people who went from India who were preaching such things to the people in the West, and they were cheating them actually. There are many, many people who cheat. In fact, they will tell you don't have to follow any regulation. You don't have to follow any rules and regulations. You can do whatever you want. You just enjoy life. You just come and pay me money. You pay me this much and I'll give you a mantra and your life will be success. You'll get all success. So we may easily get cheated by such people. And many people get cheated also. So when you go to a diamond shop, do you just pay some 2 lakh rupees and buy a diamond there? First of all, before you go to a diamond shop, you inquire from your brother or from your relatives whether it is an authorized good diamond shop. First you check that. You know, without checking, you don't go to any diamond shop. And then even after going there also, you have some test to, you know, check the diamond. You check whether it is proper diamond or it's just some. Nowadays there are many glasses which look like diamond. They make imitation diamonds. So we can be cheated also. So you will check the quality by some method, some test or something. And then still you will ask for some guarantee card. With all that, you will have the phone number, address, card and everything. In the same way, choosing guru is not a joke. There are so many people, fake god men, wandering about, claiming to be gurus and claiming to be giving knowledge. So one should know who a guru is and who a guru is not. Okay, if I ask you, whom will you accept as guru? Whom do you think is fit to be a guru? Somebody can say. Long ago we had a class on guru. Any of you know? What do you expect from a guru? Let me see. To show the right path? Okay, she says that guru should show the right path. Okay. Somebody can be more precise about what is the right path, yeah? Somebody who can help us go out of this material world and go back to spiritual world. Okay. To the kingdom of God. Yeah? He says that he walks his talk. That means a guru is one who does what he says. Practices what he preaches. Yeah, that's good. Like if somebody is smoking, he cannot tell you cannot smoke. You know? That's right, yeah. That's a good thing. Nice point, yeah. Anything else you expect from a guru? What else you expect from a guru? He himself should have been a disciple. Not that he is teaching and he has no lineage in which he is coming. He should have heard from a guru and that guru should have a guru also. He should be coming in a guru parampara. That's right, yeah. Anything else? Any of the new students who have come, you can also suggest, yeah? Okay. You should be able to answer all the questions pertaining to what is life, what is God and all that, yeah. That's good. Guru cannot say he has no knowledge, yeah. He has to have knowledge, that's good. Is anybody else can add to all this, yeah? He should control his mind and senses, yeah. That's right. Yes, you should control the six urges. Yeah. Vachavegam, Manasavegam. Yeah, that's right. You should control the mind and senses. Anything else you expect from a guru? Anybody else?
Motiveless.
Yeah. That means he doesn't expect anything from his disciple. Yeah. He just wants to see that the disciple becomes a devotee of God. Yes, that's correct. Yeah. That's all? Anybody else? Yeah? She said the same thing, selflessness, yeah? You should preach like a postman, she's saying. That's whatever his guru taught him, he should teach the same thing to his disciple. That means he should not try to speculate something of his own and add or subtract things, but he should preach purely. Whatever he has heard, he should hand over. And adding to all these things, Prabhupada said another interesting thing. Once Prabhupada said, a guru is one who is always addicted to Krishna, he said. That means he said, he always teaches the people who come to him how to become a devotee of Krishna. He thinks of Krishna, he speaks of Krishna, he does services for Krishna. And Krishna is his only business, he said. That means the guru is one who has no other business. He is firmly rooted in Krishna's remembrance and Krishna's preaching. And Krishna taught and giving Krishna to others, his only desire is that the whole world become a world of devotees. That all the people take Krishna, become servants of Krishna and become happy. So he should be addicted to Krishna. He should be very... This is one of the symptoms of a guru. There are many people who think guru is one who can give us gold, or who can give silver, or who can give ash, like that, or who can cure the diseases. So these are actually not gurus. These are tantrics who can help you cure some disease, or they can help you, you know, get some wealth and all that. Ideally speaking, like she said, guru is one who can take us from this world to that world, from the material world to the spiritual world. So he can take us to the feet of God. He is actually guru. So there are many fake godmen who don't do that. Like I was telling about yoga societies, many American boys and girls are also interested in yoga. So they thought that this yoga has come from India, and you know, if you can learn it, then we can control our mind senses, and in this way we can also do meditation. So many people consider meditation, yoga, God, all these things to be like synonymous. But when they go to such yoga teachers, they get cheated there. And they go to yoga societies, and they teach people how to have a healthy body, you know. Of course, I don't say you shouldn't have a healthy body. You should have one. But healthy body is not all in all. You should have a healthy body, but then you should have a healthy mind also. And most importantly, you should have a healthy soul, isn't it? We are not the body, we are not the mind, we are actually the soul. So how to have a healthy soul? For that, actually we have to follow some rules and regulations. Only when you follow the regulations, like we were earlier studying the regulations, the guru without fear teaches the regulations. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So he teaches all these things. So these four principles Prabhupada also taught, even in the West. No meat eating, no gambling, no form of intoxication like smoking or boozing and all that, and no illicit sex. When one follows these four principles, he becomes pure. And when one becomes pure, then one also chants Hare Krishna, chanting God's name, then one can come higher and higher, one can elevate oneself higher and higher, and one can realize God. It is possible. On the contrary, we find there are so many fake Godmen who say, there is one group, I don't want to name them. They say, Sambhog se Samadhi. That is their formula. They say that by sexual union, you can achieve trance. You can achieve Samadhi. So many millions of years have passed, and so many millions of people have had union. How many of them have achieved Samadhi, tell me? Probably they have only begotten children by union. But have they achieved Samadhi, trance? Or have they become great yogis? Or they have achieved God by that? So why are these people cheating? So they say that, in fact, all concocted religion, they say that, for example, I have emotion, like I'm angry at somebody. You just shout, they say. You just shout and shout and shout, and also give blasphemous words to the other person, whomever you are angry with, and then you empty out your heart. They say like that. Similarly, you have lust, you go and do anything with anybody, then your lust will be vented. But if you try this in the same organization who say these things, if you have to enter that organization, they will ask you a card to show that you don't have any AIDS. Why they ask that? Because this kind of organizations ultimately ruin the life of people. Because actually the senses are such that the more one tries to enjoy them, it's like a ever-growing fire. We were already discussing that before. In fact, unless one abstains from bad things, one cannot elevate oneself in spiritual life. It's not possible. As you see, for example, wine. For the first time when one takes wine, it gives a big kick. One feels very nice, but the kick takes one very high. But then he feels, I'm going in the sky, I'm flying in the sky, you know, I'm feeling very strong. And but then he comes down later on, he goes into depression zone below. Later on. It takes one, not even to the average level, it takes one down, further down. Then again you have more, again you come down. It's like it leads to mental oscillation, mental agitation. All the things of this world are like that. So there are so many bogus teachers, fake godmen, who teach many things in the name of giving God or yoga or meditation. So one has to be very careful. So you can see the life of one who claims to be a guru. Many of you actually said very correct answers. That means even intuitively, heart of hearts, we all have our conscience and we know what a guru is supposed to possess. All of you are able to come up to the point. Guru is one who acts according to what he preaches. And most importantly, Guru is one who never claims, I am God. He doesn't say, I am God. Guru is one who always says, I am servant of God. And he will say that, I will take you to God. You are also a servant of God. I am also a servant of God. I will take you to God. He is a Guru. And such a Guru, he always only desires one thing. He wants to see that people who come to him, they also live a life in harmony with God, and in that harmony become happy. He wants to make people happy. By how? By living in harmony with God, not simply by enjoying their senses. See, there are many gurus who say, you can do whatever you want, no problem. Like I know many gurus connected to very rich families, and they don't open their mouth, they don't say anything. They go to their homes and they will have a long flowing beard. They will just, you know, do their beard like this and give ashirwad, give an occasional smile, they will give, that's all. And then take lakhs of rupees and go. And by giving ashirwad like this, they will only accumulate money. But true guru is not one who does that. True Guru is one who frankly tells the truth. He cannot depart from the truth. Just for the sake, Prabhupada, when he was preaching in America, he openly preached these things. He said, no mediating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. And some people told him, Prabhupada, if you preach these things here, you will become unpopular. Prabhupada said, I never care. I will tell the truth. A guru is one who has to tell the truth. The Shastra say the truth. And because all these things will give us flickering, quick enjoyment, but it will not last for a long time. They give you some enjoyment, but how long do they last? It's only momentary. It will be finished. But one can only be happy by living a life in harmony with God. Otherwise, by not understanding what God wants us to do in the scripture, it is not possible to become happy by some show-bottle religion. There are many people who follow some show-bottle religion. There are many youngsters today who are fond of saying that, I also know karma, I also know yoga, I also know meditation, I also know God. And many of them put up an external show of practicing some kind of religion. But there is no substance in their life. That's very, very important. If you don't have substance, then what is the use of practicing religion? As I said, the religion, what is real religion? Real religion is something that brings you gradually from a feverish state to a healthy state. Like all of us are in a feverish state in this world. What is a feverish state? It means we all are suffering in this world. And we can't deny that. Everyone is suffering, some bodily suffering, some mental suffering. Nobody can deny that. And many of us have greed in our heart. We have hankering for so many objects of this world. And we have all these things. So our heart is like, you know, constantly tortured by so many things. Like all of here, correct me if I am wrong, like we have so many expectations in our life, right? And don't we hanker after those expectations that they are not fulfilled? How many times we feel hankering and the pain in the heart? How many times we suffer with the body? How many times we suffer with the mind? So we have to first of all ask this question, why am I suffering? Is God a person who derives joy by seeing all his children suffering in this world? Is God a sadist? Do you think he's a sadist? You know what is a sadist? A sadist is one who derives perverted pleasure by torturing others. He's a sadist. Like children do that sometimes. They take a butterfly and, you know, they prick with a pin or something. You've seen that. Huh? Is God a person like that who has thrown all of us into this world, and while we all are suffering, he is happy there? Why are we suffering? Somebody can say, why are we suffering? What makes us suffer? Let me see. Anybody has answered this question? You have answer, yeah? Both of you have answer, yeah?
Because of our previous karma.
He is saying we suffer because of our previous karma, he is saying. Yeah, you have answer? Somebody else? Deepak, you have answer? Okay, he is saying we have disconnected ourselves from God because of which we are suffering. Just like a child, you know, if a child disconnects itself from the mother and father and goes into the street, so he sees lorry and bus and car and people walking here and there, he gets frightened, isn't it? So that's how we also have disconnected ourselves from God and we are suffering this world. That's correct answer, yeah. Is that the same thing? He is saying we are trying to enjoy like God. We don't want to enjoy with God. That means in the spiritual world we enjoy with God actually. In His company we can always be happy. But we don't want to enjoy like Him. That means we are trying to become enjoyer. That was actually the theme today we were speaking. We are trying to become enjoyer. We are trying to become proprietor. Not only are we trying to become proprietor, in Bhumi Gita, which comes as a part of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very nice prayer by Bhumi Mata, Bhumata. Bhumi is praying there. She said that there are many kings, like Alexander for example, many kings who want to go on invading more and more land and conquer more and more land. One state after another state, one country after another country, they want to invade and invade. And they are going on invading, expanding their territory. But although they are expanding the territory and owning all this property, she says, all of these people, they depart from this world as helplessly as they entered into this world as a child. Like a child enters into this world helplessly, same way they all departed out of this world helplessly, and she is laughing at them. Bhumi is saying that I am Bhumi and I am possessing all the land, and kings spent their entire life working hard to possess different property and become proprietors, but they are departing from this world helplessly, leaving aside everything in this world with me. She is laughing like that. So we are considering ourselves the proprietor and ourselves the enjoyer. That's the cause of our suffering. So if we make Krishna the enjoyer and Krishna the proprietor, and bow down to him, surrender to him, offer him everything before we accept the things, then that can actually help us to live in harmony with him. Internally we have to actually get the consciousness that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to him. And I am his servant. So when one achieves this consciousness, immediately he is peaceful. At once. Very simple. As simple as that. Somebody else had an answer. Somebody else was raising hand. Why we are suffering in this world? Yeah. Yeah, you had an answer, yeah?
We are trying to enjoy independently.
Separately. Separate from God. So, to the degree we have distance from God, what happens is we make our own plans for happiness. We try to make our own plans. This will make me happy. That just like you see, people are making this Disney world and SL world and all that, isn't it? Why they make that? Because they have left the spiritual world. They come here and trying to create an artificial happy world in this world. And that doesn't give them happiness forever. You may go there and try for and squeeze out some happiness for some time. Again you get bored even there also. How many times will you go to Disney World? You get bored. So actual happiness lies when we are in spiritual consciousness, like Sri Sri Radha and Krishna are the life and soul of the devotees. They worship them with love. As you see, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam talks about Krishna, and Bhagavad Gita is by Krishna. So you begin with Bhagavad Gita, you read the instructions of Krishna, understand them, follow them in your life, and then you read Srimad Bhagavatam. How Krishna is the darling of Vrindavan, you understand that. Similarly, Lord Ram is the darling of Ayodhya, you will see that. Everyone is keeping the Lord in the center. Sitaram is the center of Ayodhya. Similarly, Radha Krishna is the center of Vrindavan. Everyone, the gopis are churning butter, the gopis are milking the cows, the gopis are drawing water, the gopis are cooking in the kitchen, and the gopas are working in the fields, but in their minds all of them have Krishna in the center. Krishna is actually the only object of love for everyone. In fact, that is actually the mood of Vrindavan. So we all perform activity, karma, in our everyday life, but only when we offer the fruits of our karma to Krishna, only then it can become karma yoga. It begins with karma yoga and then it turns into bhakti yoga. For example, mothers, they cook in the kitchen every morning. So when you are cooking, if you know that you are cooking for Krishna, you are going to the market, you are buying some vegetables. So you want to buy good vegetables. You want to buy that which is not rotten. Good ones. Because you are going to offer it to Krishna. Then you bring it, then you cut it very nicely, then when you make chapati, you roll it also very nice round, you don't make it into a triangular or a square one. You make it very nice because you are rolling nice chapatis for Krishna like that. And when you are cooking it also, we hear the kirtans, bhajans, we hear philosophy, we remember the Lord. So this is divine consciousness. That's how one can keep divine consciousness. And they cook and they offer the bhoga to the deities. And then one accepts it as prasadam. Similarly, men also, when you are working, like morning we should have a program of chanting Hare Krishna every day. When you chant Hare Krishna, then you can remember the Lord in the mind. And then when you go out, you know, Shariram Kevalam Karma Kurvan Napravatikal Bisham, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that in order to maintain our body and soul together, and to maintain the family and friends and relatives, we need money. We can't say, I want to work. Everyone has to work. So one goes out to do a job, to earn some money for earning his livelihood, but one knows very well that this world is a temporary world and everyone will die in this world, including me, and we all are going to leave this world. So let me prepare for my return to spiritual sky. In this consciousness, if one is working, then it is considered to be divine consciousness. Krishna is telling Arjuna, my dear Arjun, you should do your work, prescribed work of the duty of a kshatriya, of fighting, but while performing that work, you should think of me in your heart. That is very important. You should think of me. If you don't think of me, if you are only doing work, it is not karma yoga, it is only karma. That's all. It's only karma. There are many people, they put a slogan on the table, work is worship. You all have heard this? Work is worship. How can work be called as worship if the work is not performed in divine consciousness? It cannot be called as worship at all. You cannot just call. That means if you say work is worship, then donkey is the person who is the best worker. He does such a hard work. Is his work worship? How hard he works, you see. Carrying the load of clothes from the house of the washerman to the riverside and bringing it back. He works very hard also. Actually, any work cannot be considered worship. The word worship itself has a divinity associated with it. You all agree with me? When you say worship, it has some divinity in it. So there has to be a divine element in our work. Otherwise, it's not worship. For example, if somebody, say somebody is earning 20,000 rupees, say he spends 1,000 rupees at least in a month to cook some prasad and offer it to the people, by giving Krishna prasad to people. Or he makes an altar at home, or he buys some cassettes or CDs to hear about Krishna, or he buys some Bhagavad Gita and gives it as a gift to people like that. So one has to spend a part of one's earning in Krishna service like that. That is the meaning of offering one's fruit. So everyone can offer the fruits, like a woman, like a mother is cooking in the kitchen, she is offering the fruit in the form of cooking and offering her mind while cooking and offering to Krishna. Similarly, a man who is working and earning should offer some of his fruits. And we can also give credit. If a student is studying, he can offer the fruit. He can study well and get good marks and then offer the fruit to Krishna. It's all Krishna's mercy that I got good marks. One can feel like that. Then it is offering fruits to Krishna like that. So Krishna is saying here that one who is performing Karma Yoga will have the divine consciousness, and he knows that everything comes from God. My talents come from God, my abilities come from God, and all the resources that I enjoy in this world also come from Him. And I have taken it from Him, so I owe Him. In this consciousness one who lives, such a person actually very soon achieves the company of God. He is called as actually the devotee of Krishna, devotee of God. And by having become a devotee, then one will become free from all fear, one will become free from all lamentation, and one will become free from all the inabilities of this world, and one can live a very happy life even while being in this world. And then when one leaves the world, then one achieves the kingdom of God eternally, to chant with Him, dance with Him, enjoy with Him, and in His company serve Him with divine love. So this entire chapter of Karma Yoga gradually will take us to that point. We'll be going ahead, we'll be learning how to do that, Karma Yoga. I'll stop here. Any questions? Let us leave 5-10 minutes for questions. Many of you have come for the first time today. Please feel free to ask questions. You can put up your hand, then you'll get a chance. People can get some papers, they can circulate papers. They will feel more free to ask questions through papers. Yeah. And they can be circulated with some pens also. Yeah. You will see in a temple also, the deities with raised hand. This kind of raising hand is a symbol of surrender. Surrender. Just like if somebody shows a gun, you do hands up, right? What does the hands up mean?
I surrender.
When Draupadi was in trouble, what did she do? She raised her arms and called her Krishna's names like that. So this is a sign of surrender. So this is an expression of surrender. Anybody else has any other question? Can circulate some papers and pens.
Yes,
pens also they have?
Yes.
I have two pens. I can give this also.
Hare Krishna mantra. There are many other bhajans for Krishna only, but besides the bhajans, what speech is called? Why we can't chant and why we can't sing those bhajans in ourselves?
No, we can sing bhajans. There are bhajans. We can sing bhajan. The purpose of bhajan also is to remind us of Krishna only. We can sing those bhajans. But we chant Hare Krishna mantra because this Maha mantra is given in the Kali Santara Upanishad. There it is said that in Kali Yuga people should chant this mantra. This mantra will work very fast for you, for anybody. Yeah. Acha, you are asking the bhajans outside ISKCON, why you are not singing? Yeah, there is a reason for that. Because many of the bhajans are not sung in a mood of unmotivated love. They are not sung. Like for example, somebody is singing, you know, Dukh Mite Tanaka, what is that song? Dukh Mite Tanaka, what is that? Om Jai Jagadishwara, you know. Sankata Dur. Huh? That's Arati. What do they sing? Yeah. And then? Yeah. And then? Anybody knows? See, he is praying Bhakta Janonke Sankata Dur Karo Sangatva. So, this prayer is a motivated prayer. Actually, in ISKCON, we are trying to learn love of God, as I said. How to love God without expecting anything from Him. See, a child never asks the mother, "My dear mother, today you are giving me milk. What about tomorrow? Better, it's better that you write a bond and give me. That tomorrow also you'll give me milk." Will a child ask like that? Child never asks for a bond from the mother. Child has complete faith in the mother. Similarly, we want to depend on Krishna completely with full faith, without anticipating anything from Him. Knowing well that He will supply what we need. He says that in Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Kshema Mahamyaham, He says. So such prayers like this, it says, "Oh my dear Lord, you, you know, relieve the pain from my body, you know, relieve the pain from my mind, you know," and then it says, "Give me wealth, give me this, give me that." We don't have to show any list to God. God knows what we need and He'll give us. And there are many other bhajans also which are like sahajayik bhajans. Sahajayik means, you know, they directly approach Krishna without the guru. They say that, you know, they consider themselves to be like a gopi or a very elevated devotee of Krishna, and they directly sing glorification of Krishna. Or some songs are demanding Krishna to appear. "Hey Bhagwan, give me your darshan," you know. Actually, we have to ask ourselves, what is my qualification to demand God to appear? That kind of songs we don't sing. And many songs outside ISKCON are like that. We have seen that. That's why we don't sing. If a song is pure and only the names are there, like we sing one song, you know. Jai Jai, Jai Jai Nanda Yashoda Dular Girivaradhari Gopal. This is not from ISKCON. Gopal, 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 Govinda, Govinda, Gopal, Jai Jai Govinda, Govinda. This is actually just the names of Krishna. We sing this song, we don't mind singing. But if any song has a motivated kind of worship, or any song is out of fear, you know. So, say fear, duty, desire, love. These are the four platforms. So we don't like to sing songs that come out of fear or duty. No, "Oh God, don't punish me," songs like that. We don't sing such songs. Those are all very low platforms. Love is the highest platform. We sing songs that are written by great acharyas in the platform of love. Here are the papers. I can give the papers to them. They will circulate it. Actually, many religions worldwide, they all are actually on the platform of fear. If you give the paper, they will circulate it. You can just give it. In ISKCON also, there are many varieties of bhajans. There are now probably about 250-300 songs we have. Sing, if it is only praise of Krishna without... Actually, you can even confirm it from another devotee. You can check whether the song is pure. And there are other songs in which there is a mixture where the devotee says that, "I want to become one with you. You know, I want to merge into you." So devotees never pray that, "I want to merge into God." Devotees always pray, "I want to become your servant." So that we have to know. Many impersonalists pray that, "I want to become one with God." Devotees never pray like that. Devotees always pray that, my dear Lord, I want to be your servant. I want to love you and serve you. Even after we die, when we go to spiritual world, we also serve God there. In love. We don't become God. That's why there are many songs that are impure. The message is impure. That's why we don't sing. No, we have to be 100% pure to go back to God. Actually, when we are in the spiritual world, we are eternally serving God, but we don't know how we fell into this world. Because spiritual world is outside the time domain. And we are into the time domain. It's very difficult for us to understand how we fell. Just like, you know, you are travelling in a ship and somehow now you find yourself in water, drowning. So now we have to find out how you fell. So somebody is throwing a rope into the water. First you have to catch the rope. When you go back to ship, they will tell you how you fell down. But still, Prabhupada gave some understanding of how we came to this world. A soul sometimes desires something like, you know, my dear Krishna, I want to create something for you. I must do something. And Krishna says, oh, you want to create? I have created everything. You don't need to create anything. You need to just cooperate with me. But the soul is very intensely desiring, wants to create. Then he gives him the body of Brahma. He sends him to this world. He becomes Brahma. And he can create whatever creations he wants to do. And then he can go back to Krishna like that. But sometimes what happens when he becomes Brahma and he creates, and after creating he looks at the creation and thinks, oh, after all I am not an ordinary person. I am also a very great person. I have done such a wonderful creation. When that ahamkar comes, then he comes down to a human body, ordinary, average human being. Then as a human being, if he commits more sin, then he can become an animal. Because Atma is moving from one body to another. So he can leave the human body and he can occupy animal body or a plant's body, aquatics body, and any such body. That's how he goes down like that. So he had a desire when he, sometimes a child is adamant, isn't it? Child says, tells the mother, my dear mother, I want to cook in the kitchen. You get out of the kitchen. And the mother says, you can't cook anything. Child doesn't understand. Okay, you take this, some toy set, and you go and cook. She gives like that. Then the child has his own toy set and is trying to cook something. The child can't cook much. Again the child comes back to mother later. Similarly, we also, when we come to this world, we try to enjoy separate from God in so many different ways. When we realize we can't, then we go back to him again. Of course, after many, many lifetimes, Bahunam Janmanamante, Krishna says, we come to this realization. Otherwise, just wandering in this world. So many bodies, again and again. Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, again and again. Yeah, actually when we say Bharat Varsha spreads much, much more far and wide. It spreads to the whole globe. Even today you find, deities of Mahalakshmi in Russia, when they dug, they find deities of Ganesh, deities of Vishnu. You know, if you go to, I think it's Mongolia, next to Mongolia, I think. Anybody knows where is this Angkor Wat temple? Angkor Wat, you know Angkor Wat? Where is it? Anybody knows the famous temple? Cambodia? I think Cambodia, yeah. So this Angkor Wat temple is actually a Vishnu's temple. If you go inside, you will find it. So how is the Vishnu temple so far from India? Actually, the Vedic culture was spread all through the globe, actually, in Vedic times. Later on, gradually it started shrinking. Now only a small patch of land called India has it to some extent. As it has spread worldwide, actually. Malaysian, Thailand, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else, those who came for the first time, you must be asking some questions. Probably they're very shy to ask. Yeah. Actually, we should have an exclusive program for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could discuss more basic subjects there, yeah. We can chant for a few minutes. Yeah, malas with us, we have malas. So they can learn meditation how to do. Not lived pleasure. It's a physical pleasure, we call it. But mental pleasure is a little more longer. Like you hear some nice music, so that actually lasts in the mind. You keep singing it while going, coming, it lasts for a longer time. Similarly, pleasure in the platform of intelligence. Like, you know, you make a checkmate while playing chess. Then you feel very nice that you have done something wonderful. So when you apply your intelligence, you feel more happy. But then when you do something extraordinary which no one has done in the world, no one has done, then you feel very happy, just like, you know, hoisting a flag in Mount Everest. Then lifelong you have that ego satisfaction. I have done something which no one has done in the world, or whatever like that. Egoistic satisfaction. So body, mind, intelligence, ego, in this way there are many levels of enjoyment. But beyond all these things, there is some pleasure which is oceanic pleasure, which is the pleasure of the soul. And that pleasure of the soul can be experienced in the company of God. That's why we are here for. So we are not here to go away from pleasure, but we are here to understand that oceanic pleasure, having achieved which, all the pleasures of this world will look very puny, very trivial, like that. Actually, everyone knows that there is some kind of happiness in connecting oneself to God, but people are busy in this world, running here and there, searching for varieties of pleasures. But if you come here, and if you chant Hare Krishna, and if you read Bhagavad Gita and follow the things patiently, then by achieving such a wisdom, you will achieve the unlimited pleasure. And Srila Prabhupada went to the West, where he found many hippies who were thoroughly drunk and taking to drugs, and they were having illicit connections, and they were smoking, all kinds of habits they had actually, and they were growing long hair and everything. So America was having a tough time controlling these criminals. Criminals and hippies both. They just couldn't control them. It was like going, criminal police, even they were shot dead by the criminal people. But when Prabhupada went, many of them actually, by hearing the Bhagavad Gita and by chanting Hare Krishna, they completely became transformed, totally. In the same way, it's possible, if they can be transformed, what to speak of people like all of you here? Is there anyone here out of India? Everyone is born in India, isn't it? If anybody born in India can very easily pick up this, easily. During bad times, that is when we try 100% things that don't work. My question is, why things don't work? Even after you try yourself, you give in 100% trying yourself and praying also, why things don't work? There is nothing good happening at this bad time. Not even a light of hope. Why? We have good times also, but no hope even during bad time. Yeah, this we all can experience in our life, that there are good times and there are bad times. Sometimes the ocean is calm, sometimes there is storm in the ocean. Similarly, in our life, sometimes we are in smiles, we show all our 32 teeth, we display all the teeth, we are very happy. At other times, we are completely broken down to tears, and there is suffering. If you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains about this, that we all actually are born with a particular psychophysical nature in a particular family according to our previous activities. And you will see that, like, you are born in a good family, like you are born in with a silver spoon, like, you know, you have no problem of eating, there is no problem in having a good education, good studies, and then you get most of the things that you aspire for in life. But sometimes our expectations are too high. See, in material life, always look at people who are below you. In spiritual life, always look at people who are above you. Then you will never be frustrated in life. Like in material life, look at people who don't have hands and legs, those who have polio attack. And look at your own hands and legs. God has given you a proper body. And look at people when you are passing by, look at people living in the slums, how they live. Very, very troublesome. They don't know tomorrow what kind of food are they going to get. But look at your own life, you have enough food to eat, enough nice clothing to wear, enough varieties of dresses, and good education you have. So if you see the have-nots, then you will realize that I am certainly much better. God has put me in a better situation. You will certainly be more happy. And besides that, you will see that there are things which are within your control and there are things beyond your control. So there is circle of influence and there is circle of concern. You all know this? Stephen Covey also teaches this. You put a bigger circle called a circle of concern and a smaller circle called a circle of influence. Now we all have many concerns. For example, if somebody feels that everyone in this world should love me, everyone should like me, do you think it is possible that everyone will like you? Certainly there are going to be people who will hate you. At least a handful, everywhere. Or if you say that, see, examination study is in circle of influence, but the examination result is outside. It's in circle of concern. Similarly, if somebody feels that, if only my face cut was little different, how nice it would have been. Everyone would love me. Like somebody performs 14 operations on the nose. One actress did that, you know that? In order to have a proper nose. Still her fans are saying they are not so happy with her. Even after performing 14 operations on the nose. 14 surgical operations. So people want to change their face cut or put some cosmetics. And everyone wants to be called as the most beautiful or handsome personality. But we get frustrated. You may satisfy some people, but you may not be able to satisfy everyone. Certainly somebody will be more beautiful than you. It's possible. Similarly, you can't become the wealthiest. You ask the people, like the seventh richest man once was interviewed in the TV, and he was asked, what do you, can you express your mission in life in one word? And he said, more, he said. In one word, more. More and more. And then the first richest man, you know what he said? He said that I have to work so hard, now I work about 18 hours a day, otherwise I can't maintain myself in first. Anytime I'll go down, like that. That's the situation. So, we all have expectation, but if the ambition turns into greed, that will lead to frustration. Ambition is not bad, but when ambition turns into greed, then we will never be satisfied. We will be inevitably frustrated in life. And also when we become Krishna conscious by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna gives us such a deep maturity in the heart that one will be able to be satisfied with whatever God has given. And also one knows that there are things beyond my control. Everything is not in our grip. See, the modern society puts you under illusion that everything is in your fingertips. Mobile is in my fingertips. The TV set is in my fingertips. I can put on the fan, I can put on the light with a remote control. Everything is in my fingertips. So you tend to think that, you know, everything is under my control. I can operate the world in the way I want. But we don't know that our nose is in somebody else's hand and he is controlling us in a remote way. Isn't it? That is karma, and there is God beyond that karma also, and he is giving us the fruits of our karma. See, those people who say that I don't get what I expect in my life, I have a question to them. There are many times, unexpectedly, many good things also happen to you. Like, you know, like once I wrote my strength of materials paper. So out of 8 units, I studied only 5 units. And actually, they give a choice, 5 out of 8 you have to write. But I studied only 5 units. That means 5 units means 1 unit has many chapters in that. I studied 5 units and I wrote all of them and I expected around maybe 70 marks or 80 marks like that. And I got my mark sheet, it was 98. I don't know whose mark came to me. It was 98 marks. I just couldn't believe. You know. Of course, I had made some mistakes also. I didn't expect more than 70 or 80. How many of you have this experience that sometimes you didn't expect much but you got a big score? Any of your experience? Or really many? Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it? Sometimes you get like that. So do you go and tell your teacher that, sir, I'm sorry, no, I should not have got more than 70, you know, please, kindly reduce my marks. Do you do that? Sometimes even in a test paper, by mistake, if the sir in counting, he makes a mistake and gives you 20 marks higher, you know, you suddenly keep quiet and put your paper inside the bag, huh? Isn't it? But when we get poor marks, then why are we plunged into grievance? But why God, why my expectations are not fulfilled? The advertisement people, that's why they cheat you by saying, I get what I want, they say. Because nobody in this world gets what they want. Everyone has at least one thing in life which they wanted but they didn't get. You certainly have. That's the nature of this world. The world is so created. Actually, we all are here in a pleasure hunt. You know what is pleasure hunt? We are in a pleasure hunt here. Separate from God, running here and there for happiness. And we will become completely satisfied only when we come closer to God. That's the only way. And you will feel oceanic satisfaction. Apuryamanam achalapatishtam samudramapah pravishanti yadvat. Krishna is saying, such a person feels such a satisfaction that he is like a ocean, he says, like a standstill ocean. His heart will be like a ocean. He will not be agitated by the joys and sorrows of life. But when joys come, people jump up. When sorrows come, they lament. Just like in India-Pakistan match, when India lost, people get some psychotic, you know, psychosomatic disease or some depression or something. When India wins, then they burn the buses or whatever, you know, or they break the TVs. So people become overly reactive. So we have to know that there are things which are beyond my control. And my karma is also operating. My good karma, bad karma. We all have bad karma also. Due to which we will not get what we aspire for in this life. And we should... I read recently a very interesting quote from Alcoholic Anonymous. They say, my dear God, please give me the intelligence and strength to do those things which can be done and which ought to be done. and give me the serenity to accept those things which I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference between the two. That means there are things which ought to be changed, which is like our own character, our own behavior. We have to change, certainly. And there are things which we cannot change, like the expectations which I set. Like somebody is short, for example, and they want to look very tall. It's possible? You can have a high heels, you know, you can have, you know, 5 inch or 6 inch, but you cannot get, 2 feet higher, no? Not possible. Or somebody is very fat, they try to reduce their fat by, they go for walks, they go for jogging, and it's very difficult to reduce the fat. You can try that, they go for so many courses and everything. Similarly, somebody's face cut. Actually, all these things are unchangeable. Sometimes even the seasons, it's terribly hot, terribly cold. So we are living in a world which is a world of change and which subjects us to suffering. But by getting the company of God, one will learn to live even in the midst of miseries without feeling any pain. One can live very happily. And people who are with God are always the happiest people. You ask the mendicants, you ask the sadhus, how much do they have? They have one cloth in their body, one cloth in their clothline. Whatever food is given to them, they accept. They just sleep on a chatai, a simple chatai. And they rise early in the morning. They are simply preaching God consciousness. Great saintly people. What is the life? Compare yourself with theirs. They have hardly anything to enjoy in life. They are simply they are living for God, if you see like that. So we should learn to cherish what God has given us in our lives. Be grateful for that. That's why I said, in material life, whom should you see? In material life? In material life, you should see people who are poorer than you and below you. In spiritual life? Someone is above you. Then you'll be inspired to also advance in spiritual life. So a brilliant question. Very nice question. People get this question certainly in life, yeah. So all of you, mala with you? Can you not give the mala?